Shannon, it's great to see you. I'm going to throw you a curveball right to start, but when was the first time you floated a river and where was it?
Oh, that's a really good question. It was in college. I was going to school at the University of Oregon, and it was through the outdoor program, and we floated the Rogue River as a cleanup. So it was a four-day trip. We picked up a ton of trash, and I loved every minute of it.
And then did you start guiding in college, or what's your background as a dirtbag guide?
I after college, I lived on a permaculture farm on Orcas Island.
Nice.
And so that included, I built my own little house. Everything was off grid. We had little outhouses that we built. We called them, when they got full, we'd move it and plant a tree. And we call them the Poopsamore trees, cherry trees. They love growing in that environment. And I started having dreams about avalanches and waterfalls and bears, and I knew I had to go out there and experience more of the world before I could live such a peaceful life in a place like Orcas Island. And I ended up going to California, working for Naturalists at Large, taking wealthy kids into the wilderness. They have their own issues. Like, a lot of them believed that the entire world was covered with concrete and any plants were put there just for enjoyment by people who come to their house and garden.
Right.
Yeah. Right. You'd never been outside barefoot, you know. It was kind of interesting. I spent a couple years doing that. I worked with some really amazing people during that time, including Craig Childs, who really turned me on to some different ways of looking at the world. And I realized from that experience that I didn't really want to be taking people out into the wilderness who didn't really want to be there. Right? Like, so guiding was a great next step, because folks who go on guided trips are committed. They want to go. They paid money, they signed up, they signed the waiver. So I ended up moving up to Northern California on the American River, went to raft guide school and spent a year working there. And then I went on a Grand Canyon trip and was like, oh my gosh, it's even bigger than I thought, which ended up leading me to coming to Idaho to work on the Middle Fork and the Maine Salmon. So that's kind of the river guide story, which that led me to going to where you and I both have a lot of crossover, to the Tetons, where I was lucky enough to be a Catski guide at Targhee and an off-trail backpacking guide through the Tetons and Yellowstone, what's it called? Oh my gosh, the Wind River, sorry.
That's right.
In the back of Sierra.
Can you talk just a little bit about what being a guide is like?
Idaho is unique that we have so many multi-day river trips available. So guides that come and work in Idaho, they're on a turnaround, right? Like, so a Middle Fork guide, we'll just talk about that. You know, there's 7 days in a week. It's a 5-day trip. You go to the put-in a day early to do your put-in stuff. And so you're on a 6-day turnaround on a 7-day week. So you're back into town for about 24 hours. So you're pretty much living on the river or driving across Idaho. And living on the river means getting up super early, making coffee, breakfast, feeding everybody, cleaning up camp, taking down the groover, loading up the boats, getting back on the river, stopping, making lunch, getting back on the river, getting to camp, setting up camp, making dinner, having campfire, making sure everyone is good, gone to bed, and get up and do it all over again. And within that also means taking care of all the equipment, making sure that the coolers are good, making sure the guests are safe, making sure everyone is in a good place, and making sure that your crew's together as well. And then throughout that is like paying attention to the weather and if there's a fire, all that good stuff.
Do you have a feeling for how many guides there are in Idaho and the Northern Rockies?
In Idaho, there currently is just over 2,300 guides. And Idaho is unique in that Idaho actually licenses their guides. So we can actually count and track, and we know who they work for. And we often know how long folks have been guides. Like, there's a number of outfitters that have guides that have been working, most of their guide staff has been working for them for 20, 25 years.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I mean, and you know, they're working from as soon as it's warm enough to float the rivers to as soon as it's too cold, essentially, right?
Depends on the river. Yeah, like the Selway season is early and it's short. And then, so maybe you work for an outfitter that you work in the Selway for a little bit, and then you come and you work on the Middle Fork Main, and then maybe you do Lower Main, and then maybe you're doing a what we call a cast and blast trip, or steelhead fishing or something like that. So depending on you, depending on what kind of guides you are, you've got that. And when we talk about guide in Idaho, we're also talking about climbing guides, skiing guides, fishing guides, mountain bike guides, all of them.
And so, you know, the reason we're talking about guides, though, is the Red Side Foundation, of which you're now the executive director. How long have you worked for Red Side, and how long has Red Side been around?
I've been with Red Side just for a couple of months. So coming into this right at the start of a global pandemic has been pretty interesting.
I'm sure.
Red Side was formed in 2010. There was a very beloved and wonderful guide named Telly Evans who took his own life. It was super tragic and it hit everybody really, really hard. A bunch of his close friends got together and fellow guides got together and they wanted to do something to make sure that another guide didn't go through the same struggles that Telly did. We've all seen guides go through those struggles if you're in this community. So they got together and they formed Red Side and they went to Telly's mom, Jane, who's an amazing human being. And they asked Jane if it was okay if they started this organization in Telly's honor. And she said, you know what, if we can save just one life, it'll be totally worth it. And so in the last 10 years, Red Side's actually been able to help save a number of lives. Red Side is there to help guides. You know, we talked a little bit there about what it's like for a work day for a guide, but one of the things that we don't really think about is that when the season is over and you're not constantly in charge and involved in everything going around you and you leave that scene and that community that understands who you are and what you do and you go back into what we would call the real world, you can lose a little bit of sense of who you are and where you belong. And then you maybe you go work at a ski resort in the winter and you have your community there. And then you leave that community again and you go back to the river, or you go back to the hunting camp or whatever it is. It's really hard to maintain relationships, you know, like to have a family, like family life can be a little bit tough. So guides can really struggle with some mental and emotional issues, substance abuse.
What's the economic impact of guiding in Idaho?
The total estimated economic impact is about $1.1 billion.
I mean, it's a pretty massive number, all going through about 2,300 people, you know, which is fairly staggering. And I would imagine, I mean, what's the average salary of a river guide in Idaho these days?
So the average salary, if that we're just assuming that river guide or that guide has a winter job as well, the average salary is about $46,000.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So a little bit over minimum wage.
Bit over minimum wage.
But it has great benefits, as they say. What are the variety of services and things that Red Side does offer and provide to guides?
So we have a 24/7 confidential guide helpline that any guide, friend of a guide, or even an employer could call and get that guide referred to some mental or emotional health counseling. And then Red Side removes the financial barrier so that it's possible. For a lot of guides, that means some remote counseling, which is pretty cool. Last year, we had more than 185 individual counseling sessions, pretty effective. We have a financial helpline as well. So you know, when you're working in the Frank Church all summer, and you get done, and you see this huge amount of money in your bank account, it could be real easy to go and blow it, right? So it's nice to be able to have that resource for guides to be able to call and say, hey, what do I do? How do I deal with debt reduction? Should I put some of this in a money market? Should I buy stocks? What should I do? You know, it's not necessarily a guide's ball of wax to know what to do with money.
Right.
We also have, we do professional development grants, and actually we just told the folks who applied for them this spring who got what for what. So generally in a year, we have maybe 26 guides who get a professional development grant, and that could be $100 to $500 towards whether it's like a wilderness first responder or horse packing or whatever kind of course they need in order to continue to develop their guiding career. This year with COVID, this spring, we only had 3 people apply for a professional development grant. Whew, that's a little heartbreaking for us.
How many people would normally apply?
30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So down to 3, the expectations have changed.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. We provide academic scholarships, 3 a year, which I think is pretty cool. And then a lot of community building. Generally not in a COVID year, but in a normal year, we put on events all over the state and guiding communities to bring guides together and build up the community and let each other know that we've got each other's backs. And that's really very cool. But this year, because we don't have that, we're doing a lot of virtual guide gatherings with specific subjects that have been pretty well attended. It's been pretty cool. And we also host an annual health fair that guides can attend and do anything from get a dental check to blood work to, you know, anything that you would do at a health fair.
And how does the Red Side Foundation support itself?
Mostly, that's a great question. Mostly through donations from individuals. We have a couple of foundations that give us some good money every year that we're very, very thankful for. But yeah, mostly individual contributions. We just, in Idaho, we do this thing called Idaho Gives, which is generally it's a one day of a massive nonprofit giving event. This year was a 2 weeks online giving event. Normally we get about $30,000 from Idaho Gives, and this year we got almost $40,000, which is incredible. And in Idaho, I think people recognize that guides are their family, they're their friends. They might be a guide themselves, but because Idaho has more public land than any other state outside of Alaska, I think Idaho is pretty cognizant of the fact that having healthy guides means having healthy Idaho.
What brought you to Red Side, or how did Red Side find you and bring you into that family?
Well, you know, I've loved my career in the outdoor industry, and I still dabble in that for sure, in that PR side of things. But when we came back to Idaho, I heard about Red Side and I knew I really wanted to be part of it. I definitely had my own struggles as a guide. I would travel between California and Idaho for a couple of years. I did that until I realized that I could do everything I wanted to do in Idaho and Wyoming that I ever wanted to do in California. Didn't need to go back and forth. And I would definitely spiral in the spring. I would get really, really sad. And I didn't have the language then to know that that was a mental health thing. And then as a guide, I definitely saw things. Like there was one trip on the Middle Fork. One of my fellow guides had been having some dental issues. He had a really bad toothache for a couple of weeks. And during a trip, he pulled his own tooth out with his channel locks. You know, and that was a real kind of wake up moment for me. Like, and I didn't know how long it had been since I'd been a dentist, you know, like there's some real struggles with being a guide and taking care of yourself. And I think also back to living in the Tetons, I had a friend who was a guide for Ex-Im, a retired guide, and he had a lot of depression issues, and we found him in his truck in the middle of nowhere with an empty bottle of whiskey and a gun in his mouth. You know, it's a real thing. And I felt like having learned everything I've learned in professional capacity in the outdoor industry, and with a bunch of years now studying yoga and mindfulness and brain plasticity, that maybe I had the tools to actually give something back to the community that helped form me.
Let's now talk about the thing that we've managed to not talk about at all, which is the coronavirus and the impact on Boise and Idaho and the guide community. What can you just sort of give me a lay of the land for how that's directly impacting your community?
For the guiding community, it's having a huge impact. Huge. There's, you know, we're still every day there's new information. as you know, and every day there's new information on how we may or may not be able to run trips this summer, whether it's social distancing, whether it's personal protection, whether there's consumer confidence to come to Idaho and go on a trip. There's a lot of variables. You know, there's no doubt that there's going to be less trips this summer and smaller trips, and that means that an awful lot of guides aren't going to be working. And so that, you know, not having that economic security has a huge impact on one's health as well. So one of the things that we've done is we've created a guide-friendly job board. And I've noticed that every time we put something on social media about it, immediately there's 10, 20 hits back to the website, to the job board. So I know that everyone's trying real hard to figure out what to do and how to do it. Outfitters are working really hard. They're exhausting themselves trying to come up with the right way to proceed for this season, to take care of their guides. Like I said, a lot of guides work 20, 25 years for their outfitter. They're families, and the outfitters really care.
In Idaho, and specifically regarding guides, when are the first trips potentially going to happen?
Hard to say. I think a lot of folks are thinking that might be July, you know, as we hear that LA is thinking about a stay in place through August. That could really impact things. You know, Massachusetts has no intention of lifting their stay in place orders. I'm not sure what's really happening in New York. Seattle is, you know, they keep moving their goalposts there too. And those are places where a lot of our customers come from, who come to Idaho from around the country. Granted, you know, Texas, we have a lot of folks that come from Texas, and that's opening up a little faster. That might change things. And the outfitters that I've talked to have been all over the place, Drew. There have been some outfitters who are like, well, we're proceeding as normal. And other outfitters are thinking about maybe this is the year to take a break from running trips and use that PPP to have their guides actually maybe rebuild the guide house or do some personal training. So it's all over the board. So this unprecedented time could definitely change how guiding works, right? Like, you look at California for a second. If LA is on lockdown for three more months, and San Francisco decides to do a similar thing, there aren't going to be people going to the American River, to the Tuolumne. No, what is that? And then if an outfitter doesn't use their user days, does that affect their ability to get a permit again? Will there be some sort of forgiveness for this summer with COVID, or will this change the precedent for how guiding works? Is there a chance for some of this to become extinct? Will some of it become more elitist? There's a lot of questions around that for me.
Yeah.
And for Redside, what that means is, can we do things to help support guides through transition into other things, other ways of making a living. For Idaho decided in 1939 that they were going to focus on outdoor recreation as part of their economy. So in Idaho, agriculture is number one, outdoor recreation is number two. We don't have a giant extraction industry. So how can we help the folks that have been doing this for so long maybe transition to something else? Or is there a new way to look at this business that can support everyone?
Shannon, thank you so much. It's great to see you. Great to hear what you're up to.
This has been a conversation with Shannon Walton, Executive Director of the Redside Foundation in Boise, Idaho. This is the Outdoor States Podcast, a production of Pale Morning.